Blog Talk Radio. Today, we're going to dedicate this show to the victims of the Arizona shooting, Congresswoman Gabrielle Guilford. And we're going to run down the list of the others who were killed. John Kroll, 63, federal court judge. Gabe Zimmerman, 30, one of the congresswoman's aides. Christina Taylor Green, 9 years old, an elementary school student and granddaughter of Major League Baseball executive Dallas Green. Darwin Shottard, 76, a pastor at Mount Avenue Church of Christ. Shottard's wife, Mary, was wounded in the leg, but she's expected to recover. Phyllis Schick, she was 79 years old. And Dorothy Murray, who was 76. Well, what can one say about such a tragedy? Well, apparently the media has an awful lot to say about it, and they're taking full advantage of the lunatic, the very troubled young man who committed the crime outside the Safeway. They're blaming talk radio, conservative talk radio, conservative commentary, conservative speech, conservative rhetoric. Anything and everything conservative is being blamed for this 22-year-old young man, violent act of murder and attempted assassination of a congresswoman. When Arizona Rep. Gabriel Giffords collapsed outside the Safeway in Tucson Saturday morning, struck down by a hail of bullets that killed six and wounded another 13 innocent people that had come to see her, some, a lot, were quick to claim that the act was a product not merely of a tortured mind, but rather many on the American left said the horror could be traced to the malign influence of American conservatives. Members of the Tea Party, right-wing pundits Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, and, of course, Fox News. Well, that was the narrative of culpability spun in the immediate aftermath of the shooting by some leading liberal commentators. Democrat politicians, despite warnings from religious leaders, lawyers, academics, reporters, and historians, warned that such a rush to judgment only further deepens the partisan divide in America and further poisons its discourse. Well, but they don't. That doesn't really matter, does it? What matters is to never let a crisis, never let a good crisis go to waste. Never mind that people were killed and murdered by a young man who had no connection to anything at all, conservative or Republican. I suspect, well, of course, the only connection was that a congressman, a Democrat congressman, was shot, a congresswoman, rather. But within minutes after the attempted assassination of Giffords, indeed, at a point when it was still erroneously believed in many quarters that she was dead, and that the identity of her shooter was not publicly known, some commentators, absent any credible evidence, were already busily laying blame for the atrocity in political terms. Shameful. Nobel Prize winning economist and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, the infamous Paul Krugman, blogged at 3:22 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday, "We don't have proof yet." Really? "We don't have proof yet that this was political, but the odds are that it was." Well, Paul Krugman, Nobel-winning economist, you were wrong. I wonder if an apology or a retraction is in order. And of course, we have Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik. That's an interesting name, Dupnik. A Democrat, of course, also found a political element in Saturday's bloodshed. Dupnik argued that the vitriol of the country's harshly polarized political climate was partly to blame, arguing that unbalanced individuals are uniquely susceptible to vitriol. Dupnik added in an interview with Fox News' Megyn Kelly, we see one party trying to block the attempts of another party to make this a better country. Wow. Asked by Kelly if he had any evidence Lochner, the 22-year-old shooter, was in any way influenced by political vitriol, Dubnyk offered none. Just his opinion, he said. But he's the sheriff of Pima County. One would think that his job would be to ascertain the facts of the case and do his job as a lawman and not as a pseudo-politician. Never in my 49 years on this planet have I witnessed a sheriff, a sitting sheriff, offer his political opinion during an active crime and how that opinion might relate to the crime. But as Rahm Emanuel said, never let a good crisis go to waste, not even if a 9-year-old girl is dead and several others, and a congresswoman lay gravely wounded, fighting for her life. Sheriff Clarence Dubnyk took time to place blame not on the shooter, but his focus was on political matters. Blood not even dried on the ground. Bodies not cold. Sheriff Clarence Dubnyk spoke only of placing blame on one political party over another. Now, for Krugman, well, in his blog post on the Times website, well, he went on to mention Guilford's presence last year on Palin's infamous crosshairs list. This was a map disseminated by Palin's Political Action Committee, Sarah Pack, denoting the district of 20 vulnerable House Democrats with images of crosshairs overlaid on each. The map was accompanied by a caption saying, "It's time to take a stand." Guilford herself, during her narrow campaign victory over Tea Party-backed opponent last year, had complained about this choice of imagery, telling MSNBC the way that Palin had it depicted the crosshairs of a gun sight over our district. When people do that, they've got to realize there are consequences to that action. Well, there you have it. But when a situation like this is politicized the way it is, one wonders if there's a sense that, well, we can sacrifice, well, the lives of a few people, what are they in the balance of how we stand and how we govern this country? A few lives will have to be sacrificed so that we, the Democrats, can move forward our agenda. And so the Democrats believe that moving forward their agenda by any means necessary is worth sacrificing a few lives or simply, well, I guess what they're saying is, what they've been saying over the last few days is that, you know, yeah, we got a few people killed, but the bigger issue is silencing the other party. Unnoted by Guilford then, or Krugman now, is the routine use of similar language and imagery by both parties in a culture obsessed with battleground states. Indeed, a nearly identical map, including or included in a Democrat Leadership Committee publication in 2004, featured 9 bullseyes over regions where Republican candidates were considered, where they were considered vulnerable that year, and was accompanied by a caption reading, "Targeting Strategy." A smaller caption beneath the bullseye read, "Behind Enemy Lines." The map illustrated an article on campaign strategy by Will Marshall of the Progressive Policy Institute. But Krugman's blog post on Saturday linked the rhetoric of Beck, Limbaugh, etc., to the violence. He said, "The violence I fear we're going to see in the months and years ahead," and added, "violent acts are what happen when you create a climate of hate." Yet in all of the grammatically hobbled writings and statements that Longer posted on the internet, in which, ironically, one of his chief obsessions was poor grammar, the failed student and awkward learner loner made not a single reference to talk radio or the TV host Krugman cites, to the healthcare debate or the Tea Party, to Sarah Palin or Fox News. So what we have here are a group of newspapers, television networks, pundits, liberals, socialists, communists, all taking advantage of the deaths and woundings of the poor, unfortunate individuals in Arizona. They're taking advantage of it. It's scandalous. If this doesn't turn Democrats away from the Democratic Party, or the Democrat Party, one wonders what will. This sort of behavior is shameful. Now, without mentioning Palin by name, Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois, the number 2 Democrat in the Senate, alluded on Sunday to the 2008 GOP vice presidential nominee in his discussion of the causes of violence the day before. Durbin invoked, "Don't retreat, reload," a phrase from a well-publicized Twitter message once sent by Palin, as the kind of violent sentiment that can provoke incidents like Saturday's. So, I mean, I have a lot of guns. I'm a former Marine officer, a retired Marine. I have guns and knives and all sorts of goodies, and I own them all legally, but I read Sarah's Twitter post. I follow her tweets. Not once did I consider, "Oh, well, I've got to go start cleaning my guns. Sarah's calling me to arms." I'm sure very few people, if anyone, did think to gather their weapons and make a march on Washington. But these sorts of things, he said, invite the kind of toxic rhetoric that can lead unstable people to believe this is an acceptable response. Wow. Some prominent commentators objected to these comments. "Try to place blame before an investigation has occurred is in itself inciting hatred," countered Christian missionary Franklin Graham, reached by Fox minutes after returning to the United States from Haiti, where he had hosted Palin on a humanitarian mission last month. Graham offered prayers for the wounded and dead, and cautioned against ascribing to political motivation or origin to the violence. He said, because we may disagree with a person from another political party and something bad happens to that person, does that mean that we are responsible for what happened to that person? By no means. But if somebody calls for someone to go out and shoot someone in the head, then that person is just as responsible as the person who pulled the trigger. And of course, that did not happen. Now, my fellow historian and good friend Douglas Brinkley agreed. We've got to be careful here that we don't use this as a censoring moment, or use this as a Democrats beating up on Republicans moment, or using it as an opportunity to humiliate anybody who's affiliated with the Tea Party movement. The author of numerous acclaimed biographies, Brinkley had edited the collected papers of the late Gonzo journalist Hunter S. Thompson and won the 2007 Robert F. Kennedy Book Award for The Great Deluge, or Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. There are definite times when you have to, when you have fallout from politics, Brinkley told Fox News in an interview from Austin, Texas. But we don't want to lose the central point here, that this is a deranged young man, a deranged person, that there's nobody serious, that there's nobody serious in the Republican Party that would want to see such a heinous event happen at Safeway. So we've got to be careful not to be braggadocio, not to use this, if you're a Democrat, as a weapon. Well, the cat's out of the bag, and the bag's in the river, because they've already done that. How shameful is it? Now, just a few days later, only to find out that this young man was a liberal, a Democrat, a dope-smoking Democrat, as one of his classmates put it. Not a conservative, not a Republican, not a viewer of Fox News or Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or any other conservative. So now the shift is now onto guns. I'm here to tell you right now, guns do not kill people. As I'm sure you know, people kill people. I've got many guns. They're all safely locked away, and they're not killing anyone. But I've been hearing, after the erroneous reports about the young man being a Republican assassin, that now guns kill people. Well, people have been killing people since the beginning of time. And guns have not always been here. And there are many ways to end a person's life other than to use a gun. But now the focus will shift to guns and how guns are bad. You know, my hometown of Chicago is experiencing a rather interesting situation. The mayor of the city, Mayor Daley, who is outgoing, Rahm Emanuel, is running for his seat. Well, he set down an edict that there will be no gun ownership in the city. None, mind you, legal or otherwise. Well, immediately after this policy was put into place, all hell broke loose, especially on the south side, which is where I hail from, in that city. Violence of epic and biblical proportions broke out. Guns, shootings, lootings, and everything else. This is what happens when one attempts to ban guns, because the only people who won't have them are law-abiding citizens. A criminal will find a way to get a gun. But that's logic. And, of course, there are those who really would rather suspend logic and fact, and those folks are called Democrats. Now, reporter Pete Williams, who covers legal affairs and the Supreme Court for NBC News, steered his viewers away from a political explanation for the violent attack on a political figure. The initial picture we're getting is that this is not what you would call, in the traditional sense, a politically motivated act, Williams said. This seems to be the actions of a very disturbed individual. And in fact, that's exactly what it was. Pete Williams is a very smart man. And I suspect that most of the people who jumped the gun and suggested that what occurred at Safeway in Arizona this weekend, they understood that this was not an act of political assassination. They understood. But Rahm Emanuel's faithful words resonate. Never let a good crisis go to waste. And they didn't. There's new calls for the fairness doctrine. There are calls to limit free speech. There are calls to limit what a person can say to or about a congressman or senator. All of that. Now, I don't know whether the young man is insane or not, but I do know that we need a reasonable discussion of what was going on with this man. Longer's internet statements, taken together with the police conduct with regard to his known activities, especially taken with the fact that he was rejected by the U.S. Army, paints a disturbing picture of a mind that appears not to be intact. And we need to understand that the spinning wheel of recrimination at this point should be based on facts and not based on some rhetorical determination. Now, Juan Williams says, who is the liberal Fox News analyst and historian of the civil rights movement, said, "Sheriff Dupnik speaks for a lot of people who would like to see the tenor of the American political debate dialed down a notch. People realize that in the era of Obama, a lot of highly charged vilification of the president has been going on, particularly during the health care debate," Williams said. "So people are alert for anything that could possibly be tied to the highly polarized political environment." Well, I say this. There have been very few, if any, that I have noted, hate speech, very little hate speech directed toward the President of the United States. Only vigorous opposition to his socialist agenda, his socialist policies. And somehow, if one disagrees with President Obama's socialist agenda and his desire to fundamentally transform the United States of America, one is deemed to be racist or a hate monger. I myself, being a black man, am consistently accused of not knowing my place, of not really being black. I will tell a friend or an acquaintance or an associate that I am not I'm not enamored with President Obama. I do not appreciate his policies. And when I speak this way to another black person, because I refuse to call them African Americans, because it's absurd, when I speak with another black person, they are in shock. They want to know if I'm joking or not. They say that President Obama is a black man. What the hell does that have to do with anything? Dude wants to fundamentally transform the United States, and hell, not in a good way. It doesn't matter if he's black, green, red, or purple. He's got to go. He 2012 can't come soon enough. He has got to take that plane ride back to Chicago or Hawaii or Indonesia or wherever he wants to go. Because his idea of fundamentally transforming the United States of America doesn't bode well for me and my family. And that's the bottom line. I don't care what color he is, but some would say that the rhetoric that people like me don't appreciate Barack Obama or his policies because he's a black man. And that is hate speech. But at the same time, as I quoted Juan Williams, Juan Williams states that the bump in public opinion polls President Clinton received when, in the wake of the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, he attacked right-wing radio host, President Clinton did. So Williams urged Democrats to refrain from adopting a similar attack today because what President Clinton did was hurt his party. Some on the left are taking a lot of cheap shots to try to keep Republicans on the defensive. In all honesty, there is no direct connection between any Republican group and this shooter. This guy's a psycho, and he's a nut job. And that's the bottom line. And he's going to get what he deserves. Now, I've got your lefty Obama butt-kissing moment of the day. Politics Daily's Melinda Henenberger tells us that in the wake of the tragedy that occurred this weekend when our country needs to heal, Obama was born for this very moment. Oh my God, is he back to being our savior again? Have we not decided or come to the conclusion that Barack Obama is not Jesus? He is not God. He is not our Savior. He is not our daddy. He is Comrade Barack Obama. But he's not daddy, and he is not Jesus. But apparently some people are still holding on to hope that he is our Savior, our deity. And let me go ahead and read further. This is the moment that he was born for. He has campaigned on and talked all along about the need to take the toxicity out of the discourse about how we have to be able to talk to each other. Oh my God, this woman is as deluded as the shooter. Obviously. She said, he has campaigned on and talked all along about the need to take the toxicity out of the discourse about how we have to be able to talk to each other without questioning one another's motives. So I think this could really be Obama's moment when he can really do as he proposes or brings on bringing people together. So all that talk during the campaign about Republicans sitting on the back of the bus and driving the car in the ditch and punishing your enemies and rewarding your friends, all of that was bringing people together. So, I mean, what the hell? So, Howard Fineman, who is a complete loser, he just loved Henenberger's analysis of Obama. And he added this: Barack Obama has always presented himself as somebody who stands for civility. Oh my God, I am going to vomit right here and right now. He always stood for civility while stating that Republicans were holding tax cuts hostage. I could cite so many examples of him not being civil. But let me go ahead and read further. Barack Obama has always presented himself as somebody who stands for civility, as somebody who stands for reaching out, as somebody who doesn't let hatred figure into any of his computations of politics. That's how he ran. That's the symbol of hope that he offered. And this really is a unique opportunity if he and the people around him have the discipline to take it. So let me make sure I understand this. Barack Obama has an opportunity based on the deaths of the individuals, the people, the good people who happened to be at the Safeway this weekend. So their deaths and all the others that were injured, including the congresswoman, well, they present an opportunity for him. The 9-year-old girl presents an opportunity for Barack Obama to do what? Lie? Con us some more? About what a great man he is, a great leader? You know, the way that Feynman ended the segment, answering the question of whether Barack Obama thinks his opponents are evil was classic, and here it is. From having interviewed him, a lot of this topic, and listening to him talk about the Republicans and the conservatives who oppose him, he doesn't think they're evil. He thinks some of them are ignorant, that they don't know enough, that they haven't sufficiently had the world explained to them by somebody like him. Oh, hell no. Did you get that? So now we're back to Barack Obama being this godlike figure who knows what's best for us. Barack Obama is a man, and I'm here to tell you, is a man of average intelligence. There is nothing at all brilliant about him. He is an empty suit, a man who has been made up and built up to be something he clearly is not. I'll cite just one example. During the campaign and early into his administration, he was touted as being a professor I'm losing my train of thought here. Constitutional law. He was a constitutional law professor at the University of Chicago. In fact, he was not. He was an assistant professor. He did what I did as a grad student at Georgetown University, where if the professor has something else to do or a meeting to go to or a staff meeting or just out sick, well, you go in and you take his lesson plan and you teach the class as best you can until he's able to come back. And pretty much you stumble through it because you don't know a lot of the subject matter and you don't know the students. And so you're basically a substitute teacher, which is what he was at the University of Chicago. University of Chicago being a very prestigious school, I wanted to attend there myself. But nevertheless, he was basically a substitute teacher. But he was touted as a professor of constitutional law. And these fools believe that he is brilliant and that most of us or some of us or a lot of us are just plain ignorant and we just don't understand. Now, what he said hit the nail on the head, and not surprisingly, they are totally okay with having a president who thinks he's better than his opponents. Why? Because they agree and believe that they are also better than their political opponents, and that you and me, we're just plain ignorant. Wow. these people really do expose who they are every single day. The conventional wisdom of the media establishment that strident and outspoken political debate catalyzes violence, in my mind, is an absurdity. Telling people to kill pigs, as the 60s radicals did, in fact, encouraged violence. But vigorous political debate and strongly, or even passionately held views have nothing whatsoever to do with the decision of some nut to kill a congressman or a president. Fantasies about Jodie Foster, instructions from Son of Sam, or delusions of omnipotence all can cause violence, but heated political debate doesn't. To stigmatize strongly articulated opinions on the left or on the right and blame them for the insane attack on a congresswoman is outrageous. Oklahoma City was an act of political terror, incited by resentment against federal tactics at Waco. It was not some speech that ignited Timothy McVeigh, but a massive act of violence. Fort Hood was an act of political terror. No speech incited that attack, but a culture of violence spawned throughout the Islamic world. The same is true for the shoe bomber, the Detroit airplane bomber, the Times Square bomber, and indeed the terrorist of 9/11. Neither the left nor the right should confuse political terrorism with the random insanity of a crazed lunatic. The attack on Guilford's had as little to do with ideology as the attack on the students of Virginia Tech and Columbine High School. Now, Daniel Greenfield makes a great point. There has not been a single act of Muslim violence in the last 2 years that the media was willing to identify as motivated by Islam. Each and every time they had to be dragged kicking and screaming past their cover stories through groundless claims that the attackers were motivated by psychological problems, bullying, imaginary medical conditions, or financial problems. To some adjunct of the truth. At the same time, over the last 2 years, each prominent act of violence by non-Muslims was followed by an attempt to identify the attacker or attackers with mainstream Republicans in a cynical attempt to demonize and criminalize the political opposition. But what if the killer had been a political conservative? What if he had attended Tea Party rallies, or for that matter, been active in MoveOn.org or a left-leaning union? Would the killings have made the movement fair game? Would it be right to cast aspersions on tens of millions of nonviolent citizens exercising their democratic rights in the name of discouraging violence? Since the shootings, I have gotten emails from all over requesting my opinion. How much they would like to link conservative opinions with the attempted assassination of a congresswoman, suddenly they're all interested. But their attempts at linking this insane killer to any political movement are ridiculous and insane itself.
Wow.
Now, on a lighter note, the TV series V, which to my recollection is like the third installment of this series, or is it the second? Because it was on in 83 when I was a lot younger and I watched it, and I think it was on even earlier than that again. So now, this is it, and I'll correct me if I'm wrong, because I would love to be corrected if I'm wrong on this issue, because I just haven't had an opportunity to do much research on the issue. But this series V, being, in my opinion, the third installment of this series, I would call it a brave and insightful documentary that was accurately portraying the wave of Obamamania that has swept, or that had swept, this great nation of ours. V, which airs on ABC and is on right now, airs to rave reviews and tremendous ratings. There was another documentary about the Obama campaign on HBO, but that left out a lot of relevant facts. So spaceships and lizard people aside, ABC wins the Veracity Award. And I know this is going to sound crazy, but listen on. The parable is an attractive group of aliens show up out of the blue, and they offer universal health care, advanced technology, and world peace in exchange for our trust and devotion. All we have to do is believe everything they say without question. Sound familiar? Which means don't ask anything about their hidden motives or past associations, because that would be racist or impolite. In fact, one reporter who is offered an exclusive interview with their leader is admonished not to say anything negative, or they would be denied access. Remind you of, say, Fox News? And that messy little deal where Fox was about to be denied access to the White House reporter pool? And until, well, there was a revolt by all the rest of the reporters in the pool, and Fox was later admitted. But moving further, the aliens are, well, what do you know? Hey, the aliens are really here to eat us and maybe even take over our car companies and banks. Well, that part's unclear. But I'm sure they will reduce unemployment, because there will be less people looking for work. Well, I guess V has nothing to do with Obama, does it? Because he sure isn't doing well on the job, on the unemployment front. Now, the New Republic's Jonathan Chait was outraged by the pilot. Outraged! He says, "This was not just a right-wing worldview, but the worldview of the paranoid Tea Party movement. I'm really not sure how this made it into the network television. Maybe the calculation is that Glenn Beck will start urging his viewers to watch, and a ratings bonanza will ensue. I don't expect scientists will be the scapegoats in the new series, as the original V alien campaign to tar scientists as a fifth column sits uncomfortably close to the current right-wing view that the world's leading scientific organizations are conspiring to suppress evidence that global warming is a hoax. This is what this moron, Jonathan Chait, had to say. Well, where do I begin? I went ahead and watched an all-day event of 1983's version of V, and it's pretty similar to the current version, except for a few changes. Well, one of the changes is that the visitors then didn't promise universal health care. They didn't promise a lot of free stuff at someone else's expense. Well, it's all Glenn Beck's fault. Right? Now, the New York Times critic said V was unrealistic because no one would trust attractive strangers with a hidden past and motives who told them what they wanted to hear in such a short amount of time. Well, doesn't that remind you of Barack Hussein Obama? Let me read it once more. The New York Times critic said V was unrealistic because no one would trust attractive strangers with a hidden past and motives who told them what they wanted to hear in such a short amount of time. Barack Obama was a senator for slightly less than 2 years and voted 12 times in actual votes and the rest of the time present. He's been president for 2 years and folks are proclaiming him God, or at least Jesus, or at least a deity, at the very least, a brilliant orator. Naturally, when a show debuts to huge ratings and mostly great reviews, the producer's career is golden. Not this time. Apparently, the network who gave Obama an infomercial and refused to release the Path to 9/11 DVD decided to replace the show's Scott Peterson before the pilot even aired. In fact, ABC hosted a big visit by press people last year, but Peters was notably absent. Executive producer Steve Perlman spoke with reporters. Peters had been demoted to executive producer, a largely honorary title, and has been replaced by former S.H.I.E.L.D. and Chuck alumni Scott Rosenbaum. I guess this hits a little bit way far too close to home. The visitors are promising everything with a hidden agenda. No, I'm not suggesting that Barack Obama wants to eat you. But I will suggest quite strongly that he wants to control every aspect of your life. As recently as last week, he is floating a proposal to demand that we all of you, guest 24133, 26144, 26181, 26338, and Scarlet O, that we all will someday soon, be required to have internet IDs so that the government knows who we are and where we are when we're on the internet and what we're doing. This is a proposal not by an Obama minion, but by Obama himself. Back to V. Now, was this the case of ABC purging a political dissident from the show to make it more politically subservient? ABC has been very pro-Obama, and while the president's name is never mentioned once in the show, there's little doubt what they're getting at. Critics of the V aliens are shown to be viewed as wackos or fringe people. The same way the MSM likes to portray ordinary Americans who don't drink the Obama Kool-Aid. Journalists who question the motives of the V are treated like they're not real news. Watch the show. Check it out. Now, the show has been very entertaining so far. It tries to get a lot in the first episode, so things move very fast. I guess that's why the New York Times guy found it so unbelievable. After all, lefties were questioning if Obama was black enough in 2007 before they became full on acolytes a year later. We'll have to see if Rosenbaum's episodes will feature positive portrayals of the V's death panels and their reduction of the human population as lowering our carbon footprint and saving the planet. One thing's for sure, I doubt the V would find too many people in this administration very appetizing. So watch the show V and tell me what you think. I'd really like to know what you think about the show, because Anna, Obama, very similar. One does wonder, though, when you think, if you take the time to think about this situation or about this show logically, if ABC was so opposed to it, why would they bother to air the remaining episodes? I mean, we're going into the second season now. So, perhaps all is not as it seems in terms of how ABC feels about V. But then again, politics be damned when there's lots of money to be made. So, there you have it. V. Check it out and notice the similarities between the current administration and this television show. I'm going to go ahead and end the show and once again cite the names of the six people who were killed this weekend. John Cruel, 63, a federal court judge. Gabe Zimmerman, 30, one of the congresswoman's aides. Christina Taylor Green, who Glenn Beck pointed out was born on 9/11, an elementary school student and granddaughter of Major League Baseball executive Dallas Green. Darwin Shottard, 76, a pastor at Mount Avenue Church of Christ. Shottard's wife, Mary, was wounded in the leg, but she's expected to recover. Phyllis Sheck, 79. Dorothy Murray, 76. Not a lot is spoken about those who were killed. So much attention has been focused on Congresswoman Guilford, and rightly so. So we wish her all the best and a speedy recovery. And for those of you listening, I will look for you tomorrow. Have a wonderful evening, and thank you for listening. And may God bless you and keep you safe, at least until tomorrow. Good night.
Oh,